Welcome to the Coast to Coast AM Christmas Eve special. Now, from somewhere very cold, here is George Norrie.
Well, here we are back at the North Pole, just outside of Santa's castle, and welcome to Coast AM's annual Christmas Eve special. Santa, of course, has already departed in his sleigh, and you can track his worldwide mission by going to coasttocoastam.com right now. You know, it's about 20 degrees below zero out here, and freezing. So I'm going to venture inside Santa's castle. Every year I'm here, and I'm still amazed at how marvelous this place looks. Hey, there's one of Santa's elves.
Oh, George Norrie.
Hi, who are you?
I'm Bounder, Santa's chief elf.
Oh, hi, Bounder. Good to have you with us. And once again, another year here at Santa's castle.
Oh, welcome back, George. We love you. We work 24-7, and all we ever listen to is Streamlink on Coast to Coast AM, and we love you, George, because nobody works harder than us and you, George.
Well, Bounder, Santa's off and away, giving toys and goodies to everybody.
Merry Christmas, George. Merry Christmas to the Coast to Coast audience.
All right, thanks. In just a moment, we'll begin our Christmas Eve special, and up next is Joshua P. Warren and his Christmas paranormal moment.
Hi, this is Robert Shapiro, and I am wishing all of the Coast listeners a very healthy holiday season and my best wishes for a peaceful new year.
Well, that's Robert Shapiro, noted attorney. Well, thank you, Robert, and happy holidays to you and your family. Christmas Eve, our special tonight, and of course, it wouldn't be Christmas Eve without a Christmas paranormal moment. Here's Joshua P. Warren, Joshua, founder and president of organizations that investigate all kinds of the paranormal, and we sent Joshua loose, telling him, find out more about Santa, who, by the way, if you're tracking him at coasttocoastam.com with a direct link with NORAD, right now, he is over Roswell, New Mexico. If you can believe that, NORAD actually is tracking Santa over Roswell, New Mexico. Be careful out there, Santa. His next stop in about 5 minutes, Cedar City, Utah. And we'll keep tracking him throughout the night. You can, too, by going to coasttocoastam.com. Anyway, we turned Joshua loose to find out a little bit more about Santa. And here's Joshua P. Warren. Hey, Josh, Merry Christmas.
Hey, Merry Christmas, George. And we definitely wish the best of luck to Santa Claus making it through Roswell. We don't need another crash there.
No. I wonder how the military would cover this one up.
Well, you know, some have actually speculated that Santa Claus is the code name given to UFO sightings. In fact, Jim Lovell in the 1960s went around the dark side of the moon on Christmas Day and reported back, there is a Santa Claus. And so there are some conspiracy theorists who think he was referring to some kind of an anomaly out there in space.
You know, a little kid came up to me yesterday and said, Mr. Norrie, is there really a Santa? And I said, of course there is. And as you well know, Josh, Santa Claus lives in all of us. You know, we may not believe in the old Santa at the mall or Santa down a chimney, but if you really care about the spirit of Christmas, you know he's real, don't you?
Well, you know, the funny thing is, on one hand, we can say, yes, the spirit of Santa lives within all of us, but what sort of shocked me was discovering, based upon a project that I started a few years ago, that there are people out there who swear that they have actually seen Santa Claus as adults. And in fact, as I talk to you right now, I have a folder in front of me that is full of a stack of papers from people from all over the United States, at very least, saying, I have seen Santa Claus. And it sounds absurd to many people at first, but it makes sense to me because, you know, we have spoken frequently about how that many ghostly and paranormal phenomena may be the product of what is considered tulpas or thought forms. And that is to say that even if you believe that there is no way something like Santa Claus could exist, well, Santa Claus does exist in terms of the collective sort of sense we have about how a personality is materializing. We know what Santa is supposed to be. We know what he looks like. We know how his voice may sound. We know that he has reindeer and elves and where he lives. And the fact that we all know this means that we almost create this kind of a mental model for what Santa Claus is. And the tulpa or thought form phenomenon is founded on the fact that in some cases, we actually can create something that we want to be there, and it will take on an independent life form. And I swear, George, I have got a report right here in front of me, in 1980. I won't use last names. A woman named Cecilia in Miami said that she actually discovered Santa Claus standing in her living room, and she asked him where the toys came from. And he answered, quote, "They are not made on Earth, yet I inspire the toy makers," end quote. In 1972, a woman in Spencer, North Carolina, named Betty, says she clearly saw Santa and his sleigh pulled by a complete team of reindeer across the Christmas Eve sky. 1963, a man named Don in Dayton, Tennessee, swears he and his brother not only saw Santa but observed the tracks in the snow around the house. And I can go on and on and on, and these are very sincere, heartfelt reports.
Well, you know, when I was a kid, I thought I saw Santa too, Josh. Honest to God, I was outside, and I could swear that I saw him streaking across the sky. It was really weird, and then he kind of like dipped down, and then he was gone. And, you know, your conventional mind says, come on, George, you're making it up. It's not happening. But I'm telling you, it was something very strange. Have you ever had an encounter like that?
You know, I have seen so many unusual things in the sky that I'm glad you brought that up, because when you go outside on Christmas Eve and look up, as so many people do, it increases the chance, obviously, that we will get odd reports from Christmas Eve. I contacted Dean Worsing, who has been on the program before, a good friend of mine, Lemur member, and I asked Dean if he had an example of some great night vision video that we could put on the website to show people what is being described this time of year. And I do have some posted. Lex has put a link there to joshuapwarren.com. Go look at this video footage shot with third-generation night vision, and it shows this very odd light that is not an airplane, it's not a planet, it's not something conventional, that just goes streaking across the sky. It doesn't make any noise, and people all over the world see this. Now, is it because that, well, they're looking more on Christmas Eve, so they are naturally bound to see UFOs? Or could it be that what people used to describe as Santa Claus is what you and I might call a UFO today? I don't know, but either way, I'm telling you, there is more of this stuff this time of year when people are talking about the idea of spiritual and mythical beings, whether it's Santa and his elves, or if it is the idea of angels and miracles. People open their minds, and we also know that this time of year, atmospherically, the electrostatic energy is heightened in this part of the world, and there is no doubt that all the components are in place for us to both mentally and physically help these things manifest. And people are saying, I have seen Santa, I have seen elves, not in some type of sort of, you know, euphemistic or philosophical way. This is a real experience, and a lot of people have never had an outlet for it. Maybe we'll even get some people who contact the show now and want to go on the record.
Oh, well, we'll take calls in just a few moments with you about these Christmas paranormal moments. You know, you just mentioned elves. What's your take on them? I mean, you know, of course, the traditional elf is a Santa helper, but I've had a lot of guests on the program, Joshua, where they talk about little people, leprechauns, elves, and that they're as real, they say, as you and I are.
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, that's another really interesting component when it comes to this time of year and how it relates to some of the old European traditions. Let me start by saying I recently had what for me was a pretty profound paranormal experience. Last time I talked to you, I told you that I obtained the old jail here in Ashland. Asheville, North Carolina, and I've turned it into a free museum that features some of the most extreme and unusual history. And the gallows were right outside the building. Jails are notoriously haunted. On a side note, let me say that one thing that's a little bit negative this time of year, we hear stories about people getting depressed and suicides and all that. And I've gotten some pretty remarkable photos recently that show what could actually be the apparition of bodies in mid-fall, jumping in that type of situation, which I also have posted there at the website. But point being, as I got into the jail, I wanted to sort of fill the jail with things that were going to trigger and stimulate paranormal phenomena. One of the things I have is a doll that was sent to me.
Not a Robert the doll. Come on.
It's
don't
not
do
Robert.
That
and I would. And by the way, I'm hoping I can get a little update from you if you've heard anything about the doll I sent you.
Sure.
But I have a doll that is a reproduction of an elf or a troll, if you will, from Germany. And we have both good and bad things. For example, we have, you know, we call it the good luck bear, a very super soft, a fluffy bear that, you know, people, when they rub him, they tell me they have had all kinds of wonderful experiences. But then we have these little dolls that sometimes are connected with trolls and elves in the old European tradition. And apparently, when you would walk through some of these areas, like the Black Forest, sometimes you would see a little doll of an elf that was placed there in order to represent the fact that people had indeed seen some kind of an elf or a troll that lived in that area. And if you want to pass through that area safely, you leave some kind of a reward. Some people carry little stones in their pockets that are highly polished and smooth. Some people will carry particular types of seeds. Some will drop a coin. It just depends on the nature of the culture. But if you do not leave some kind of a prize at that area, as represented, of course, by the doll, then afterward, these sprites will follow you around and will, well, they'll make your life a little difficult. I mean, they'll put your fires out. They may dump out some of your valuable resources. You know, tie your shoelaces together, whatever, you know, nothing that's necessarily truly mean-spirited, but enough to pressure you into leaving a prize there. And it's funny to me that there are people who have believed this so sincerely that they therefore, of course, have taken that next step of leaving these dolls at those places because they are literally trying to warn others for that purpose. And when it comes to Christmas, you know, we look at gift-bearing and gift-giving and gift-receiving as an integral part of these creatures. And it, of course, incorporates perfectly into the Santa Claus tradition. And it makes me wonder if this idea that we have some kind of a relationship where we are supposed to respect them is sort of playing into the whole idea that these beings have a rocky relationship with humans, and this is the time of year when good things will come to you if you acknowledge them.
Well, is this a time of the year where paranormal activity is just as high as, let's say, Halloween?
You know, it really is, because when it comes to Halloween, most of the people who think about these kind of paranormal entities think about them with tongue in cheek. They kind of sense that, well, more than anything, it's, you know, jovial, it's for fun and mischievous purposes. But the strength of belief this time of year is unparalleled, at least in our country. I mean, the idea that we are focusing on ideas related to religion and the birth of a savior and this sort of, you know, grand strange light that appeared in the sky, which of course so many believe may have been a beacon from some other world, all of that conjures up extremely powerful emotions. And when you combine that with the fact that we do have this cold, dry air that allows the electrostatics to be enhanced, it makes sense to me that when I was recently at the museum, I got snowed in. This was just a couple weeks ago. And I just was hanging out there too late. I didn't realize that the snow was piling up as fast as it was. And I got in my car, and I literally couldn't make it out. So I ended up spending the night by myself in this old haunted jail where, you know, numerous people had been executed over the years, at least up until 1907.
Perfect for you. Very fitting, right?
Well, you know, I could have slept anywhere I wanted, but I figured I'd kill two birds with one stone. If I was going to be snowed in at a haunted jail, I may as well stay in the most haunted room. And so I picked that one room in the back corner that was used as the hole. This is the only room that doesn't have a light switch. There are no windows. I mean, you could be there at 1 o'clock in the afternoon on a bright, sunny day, and it looks just as black and dark as if you're there in the middle of a cave. So I laid down on the cold floor very uncomfortably, and I was pretty tired. So I think it was about 10:30 p.m. when I finally decided to sleep. And I woke up a little after 2 in the morning, and I heard this odd scratching sound on the walls that I'd never heard there before. And at first I kind of dismissed it. And then at once, what I can only describe as what felt like two hands, very strong hands, grabbed the bottom of the wool trench coat that I had pulled over myself as cover and jerked this coat completely off of my body in an instant. And it was so tangible, I thought someone had broken in there, and I bolted upright immediately. I had a walking stick nearby that I grabbed, and I actually was, you know, for a moment there, defensive. I mean, I thought that somebody had snuck in, even though, you know, it's hard to do because it is a jail and it's got bars on the windows. It could happen. And I didn't see, you know, anybody there. In fact, I walked around the place, and I couldn't go back to sleep, so I sat there and listened to you on Coast to Coast AM the rest of the night, George. That happened so strongly, and it may have related to some of the experiments that we've been doing in our lab, charging ourselves up with electrical energy in a device we created, an experimental device called the Manpacitor, trying to help us use our brains and our bioenergy to increase these strange things happening around us that connect back to that mind-body-environment relationship. So, long story short, yes, you combine this time of year the power of the desire, the imagery, the emphasis on spiritual topics with the atmosphere and the electrical intensity, and there's no doubt about it, this is a time when people frequently experience unusual things, both good and bad.
Do you remember the movie The Christmas Carol, Old Scrooge, visited by three ghosts, past, present, and future? Do you think these kinds of spirits are all over the place nowadays?
Yeah, I do. In fact, I'm glad that you brought that up as well, because, you know, Charles Dickens proved once and for all that the idea of spirits and apparitions tie in beautifully with the idea of Christmas. And for one thing, you know, the Christmas Carol was really about time travel in a way. It was about reflecting on the past, present, and future in order to place ourselves individually into more meaningful context. And I've always felt that the one crucial key element at the very center of ghostly phenomena is time travel. Because to some extent, most people think of ghosts as being reflections from the past, a way of either glimpsing into the past or seeing something from the past come back and manifest here in the present. On the other hand, there are also cases where ghosts of the present and the future are seen. A ghost of the future might be some kind of a phantom that warns you about something that is going to occur, that wakes you up if your house is on fire, we'll say. So the idea of us sort of looking at ourselves as interdimensional beings that expand beyond this particular moment that we are consumed with, that places our lives into context by looking at the past and the future and the present all at once, is integral to the way we value this time of year.
Well, stay with us. Joshua P. Warren, our first guest in our Christmas Eve special. We're going to open up the phone lines now throughout the night as well, so you can share your miracle stories, your great Christmas stories, and we'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Well, fulfilling our promise that I made to you 8 years ago, live programming on holidays, and we're here for you live this Christmas Eve, and Ian Punnett will be live for you tomorrow night on Christmas Day night for you on Coast to Coast AM. Next hour, two more special guests join us. And by the way, our guests are also spending time with you, too. That's how much they think of you. Rosemary Ellen Guiley will join us, followed by Roger Lear. And throughout the night, we'll keep the phones open. You can ask them questions. You can talk about your favorite Christmas stories and do all that. We'll be back in a moment with your calls and Joshua P. Warren on Coast to Coast AM.
Hello, fellow travelers. This is John Fogarty wishing you happy holidays and a happy new year.
How about that? What a great musician John Fogarty is, isn't that? Hey, Joshua, I want to thank you, by the way, taking a little time out of your Christmas Eve where you could be spending it all with your family to spend some time with us, and I appreciate it.
Well, hey, it's my pleasure because I feel like that you and this audience are a part of my family, and I'd rather be nowhere else than right here with you tonight.
Well, very good. We're going to take some calls and share some Christmas stories as well. You know, you've got a great job, though, a paranormal investigator. You know, that's fun, but you take it seriously, too.
Yeah, obviously, you know, it's important to be able to find out how that those of us who can afford to think outside the box can contribute to the next level of sort of educating and developing technology. And what I mean by afford is, you know, I've been self-employed since I was 18 years old. I don't have a boss who tells me you can't talk about this, and I don't have a board that I have to confer with to see if it's going to be, you know, politically correct or publicly acceptable for me to throw some kind of strange speculation out there. I like the fact that I have complete freedom and flexibility, and I certainly don't know all the answers to these questions, but I have the ability to ask questions and not worry that it's going to, somehow interfere with me getting tenure or distort some relationship that I have with some establishment somewhere. I enjoy the independence, and I also am very happy that I'm able to come on this program and reach people directly, and that's a gift that is absolutely unique.
Fantastic. Let's go to Medford, Oregon. Kylie, west of the Rockies. Merry Christmas, Kylie.
Merry Christmas to you both. I hope you have a great Christmas day as well.
Thank you.
Something happened a couple weeks ago I thought you guys might get a kick out of. I buy lottery tickets occasionally, and usually I'll just buy the little $1 scratch-its, you know. And I bought one here a couple weeks ago. You scratch off one box, it gives you a number, and if you match any of the numbers, you'll win the dollar amount. I scratched off the first box, it gave me an 11, so I scratched off the rest of the card, and every single number I scratched off was another 11. I've never had that happen before with any other number or any kind of card. There was a total of 9 numbers, and every single number was an 11.
That defies probability, Joshua.
Didn't win very much money, just, you know, $16. That's for some gas in my car, but, you know, hey.
Yeah, that'll get you about 3 gallons now, right?
Yeah, exactly.
How do you explain that, Josh? Thank you.
Well, you know, this kind of addresses the question of numerology and the importance of numbers because, you know, everything in this life that I consider a holographic or holosentient life can be viewed from many different perspectives and represented in a grand variety of ways. Some people look and they see it in terms of colors, others in terms of music. others in terms of numbers. But everything can ultimately be reduced to numbers. And when you see these patterns of numbers, you should follow them. That's why I think we're going to see some pretty remarkable stuff happening as we get closer to December 21st of 2012. I used to think that there was nothing to it because I didn't understand it. But when you take the time and you really delve into it, and in fact, I wrote about this in my book, The Secret Wisdom of Kukulcan, you start to see that there are some things happening here which are beyond coincidence. Now, you take something like the story we just got there from Kylie. You could say that is only, you know, circumstantial evidence of something leading down a particular pathway. But sometimes in life, that's all you have, circumstantial evidence, because we can never know all the facts. And when you see those types of consistencies lining up, you know you're on the right path. Because let me tell you, when you're on the wrong path, nothing lines up properly for you.
So true. We've got to Plattsburgh, New York now, east of the Rockies. Mark's turn. Merry Christmas, Mark. Go ahead.
You too, George. My God, I can barely get my breath. I went outside to get something out of my truck. And it's real cloudy, and I look up and I hear bells, and then all of a sudden I see this big red light bulb.
Uh-huh.
It was the big man, and he swooped down. He's laughing at me. They were all there, all the reindeers. And Santa Claus stops. He says to me, ho, 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 you called George Norrie and said, I told him he's a good boy.
I love it. I was George, good this
is there
year.
Anybody you don't know?
Yeah, there's a couple out there, not many.
You're a good man, buddy, but I tell you, I just saw him. I'm south of Montreal, so evidently he's out there in the States. So I hope all those kids are sleeping, buddy.
He's all over the place. Thanks a lot, George. Mark. All right, my friend. That's Josh, I'm going to play a quick song for you, and I want you to listen to the words. You probably have heard it before, but listen to the words. And when we come back after this song, I want you to tell me what you think happened, okay? Here we go.
To say good night, then I heard my child in prayer, and for me some scarlet ribbons for my doors were closed and shuttered. All the streets were dark and bare. In our town, no scarlet ribbons, not one ribbon for her. Just before the dawn was breaking, I peeked in, and on her bed in gay profusion lying there. Lovely ribbons, scarlet ribbons, scarlet ribbons for her hair. If I live to be a came those scarlet ribbons for her.
Okay, Joshua, what happened? What happened?
I'm wiping a tear from my eye, Jordan.
I'm telling you.
You remember that song from The Hobbit, The Greatest Adventure?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I love the style of that. Wow, that's powerful.
How do you explain that?
Well, I think that there is this point at which the mind actually does coalesce into what we think of as physical matter. And the reason is that we only have one real substance, so to speak, that we have ever been able to analyze, document, quantify, and that is an electromagnetic frequency. What is physical is relative. You know, two things are physical to each other if they occupy the same realm, close enough so that they kind of resist each other.
But who conjured up the scarlet ribbons? The daughter or the father?
I'd say it was probably the father, because the daughter was asking, the daughter was requesting, the daughter wanted it, and it was the father in this hypothetical scenario here who had the impetus on him to fulfill this, to visualize something so greatly that it could manifest. Because right now, I mean, if you look around the room that you're in, if everybody listening looks around, every object that you see around you that's man-made first began as a thought. And that thought provided the form that later was used to morph into the object. Now, traditionally, you have to go out and get supplies, and you get a ruler, and you start taking measurements, and you cut things, and you get glue, and you put it together the long way. But in a crisis situation, it could be that we are evolving at some rate, in some way, to be able to actually sort of, squeeze blood from a turnip, if you will. And in fact, I dare say that this whole country would not exist if it weren't for this being, to some extent, a fact, because it was on Christmas and Christmas Eve in the 1770s when George Washington led this ragtag group of guys through impossible odds on a very snowy night to have this decisive victory over the Redcoats and the other, forces that were assisting them at the time. And if you even look at historically times of desperation, true desperation, which is a relative thing, because, it obviously was important for George Washington to try to satisfy the desires of a country and a people, but on a smaller scale, that same amount of force and focus may exist with an individual trying to manifest a scarlet ribbon. And however it precisely works, well, we may find that out someday, but I really do believe that the thought can be changed into frequencies that physically manifest something tangible.
Okay, let's go next to Kirk in Santa Cruz, California. First time caller. Hey, Kirk, Merry Christmas.
Oh, man, it's my birthday tomorrow.
Hey, actually, happy birthday, too.
Thank you. Well, actually, yes, tomorrow, but I feel, since I'm from Kirkwood, Missouri, there, I'm jealous when you talk from St. Louis.
We got 5 inches of snow out here today, too, Kirk.
Oh, my God. Yeah, I wish I was there. That's the only thing I don't miss out here in Santa Cruz. I want to say you're real popular with a lot of the homeless people here who have radios in camp. That's all they talk about is listening to your program and have your program to listen to.
You give them a high five for me.
It's amazing. Yeah. I was just going to relate one story, like my first recollection of life. I was real sick about 3 years old in the hospital, pneumonia and asthma. And it's like my first recollection of life was just being in the hospital and almost like so tired that I could just go back to where I came from, heaven or whatever. But if it wasn't for my parents, I can recollect standing there and just radiating love and like get well and come home. It's like I had a choice of either going back to where I came from or just staying here and going back to a loving family. And it just, I don't know, it's just a recollection that always stuck with me, like my first choice to stay because of the parents and the radiating love, that I wanted to stay like on this earth and just get well and go home and live life. I just, something I'd never forgot or just always cling to. There's just so much love out there that, you know, I wish everybody could just feel the love.
And not just during Christmas, Kurt. It should be a year round. You know that?
Yeah. It's been quite a cultural awakening in Santa Cruz coming out to the West Coast. And that's just great. And just listening to you at night, too, and everything, it's just wonderful what you do, especially the other night with that lady that called that you helped out. Just such a season of giving and everything.
You got to do that. Thanks, Kurt. You have a great Christmas out there. We'll take some more calls. We've got Joshua P. Warren for the rest of this hour. Before next hour, Rosemary Ellen Guiley joins us. Later on, Dr. Roger Lear as well, and all of them donating part of their Christmas Eve and their Christmas to be with you as well during our live programming. What are you doing tomorrow, Josh, by the way? Or I should say now in the morning when you get a quick sleep and wake up for Christmas. What are you doing?
Well, I am very fortunate that I live close to my family, my mother and father and my sister, and so my wife and I are going to go over there, and we're going to have a big feast. It's very traditional. You know, it's funny. My family has been here in the western North Carolina area since the late 1600s. I've been able to genealogically verify this, so I am of one of those rare families that goes back into the history of this country pretty close to the earliest European involvement. In fact, you know, the first European settlement was off the coast of North Carolina, and I think around 1590 at Roanoke Island, and all the colonists disappeared mysteriously. They now call it the Lost Colony. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I'm lucky because all of my biological grandparents are still alive, and, you know, we get together and we have a big, fun, traditional family gathering. And I know right now that things are tough for everybody, you know, with the economy the way it is, and who knows what direction that's going to go in. But, you know, it doesn't matter if you have $1 billion. What's it worth if you don't have people around you to share your memories with, your fun times, to laugh? And so I'm blessed and fortunate in every way. And I personally feel like that our country would do better if we all decided that, hey, we're only going to deal with other people in other countries that share our values, that are positive, that are loving, and that promote liberty and freedom. And this is the time for us to sort of focus on the fact that if you do what's right and we all love each other, then the productivity will follow and adhere to that.
Josh, enjoy your Christmas, my friend, and we'll talk to you in the coming new year. I can't believe we're moving into 2011 already. What happened to 2010? We'll be back in a moment.